Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Ondela for that news update. There'll be more news with the SAFM team in 55 minutes. But right now on this day, the 19th of December, back in 1924, the last Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost would be sold in London. In 1941, on this day, the famous dictator Adolf Hitler would officially take command of the German army. In 1974, on this day, Nelson Rockefeller would be sworn in as the United States Vice President. 1980, on this day, Iran would request $24 billion in government guarantees from the US, or in US guarantees rather, to free hostages. Who knew you could negotiate hostage negotiations with government guarantees? 1994, on this day, Rolls-Royce would announce that their V12 engines would now be produced by BMW. 1998, on this day, Bill Clinton would be impeached over the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Not the first president or the last president to be impeached in America. And in 2012, on this day, South Korea would elect its first female president. You're tuning into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And for the final time this evening for this year, the show is live. We are going to be taking a break after today for the Christmas period, but we have got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be speaking to Eskom. We're going to be looking at the results, the annual financial results that Eskom gave us. We're going to speak to the chief financial officer and try and understand those numbers. We're also going to have a conversation with Treasury One's Andre Siliers about the performance of the rand throughout the year as we wrap up the year, and we're going to reflect on some emerging travel trends with the team at Marriott International. Then we're also going to take a look at how Standard Bank is championing the small business sector, or the small, medium and micro enterprises sector. And we're going to reflect on the conversations we've had throughout the year. We're going to play you one of our favorite SME conversations that we've had throughout the year. It's been requested. We're going to play it and we're going to reflect on that as well.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As you know by now, we start off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by wealth manager at PSG Wealth, Nellis Brink, to take a look at the market movements and see if we can digest them. Good evening, Nellis. Thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to catch up with you as always. Last night, we got interest rate decision out of the US. The decision itself was not alarming, but the conversation that followed thereafter sent markets into a tailspin. I can't see any market that's really recovered today other than US markets, which seems a bit biased.
Good evening, Jimmy. It's great to be back. Yeah, that was a tough conversation last night, definitely. As you so well said, the rate cut was expected, 25 basis points, well on track, going well. And then they gave Powell the microphone. So
it's never a good thing.
What he did, just to break it down for the listeners, what he did is he said they will not, definitely not, he used very strong language, as we call it, he will definitely not keep cutting at the current pace. As little as two cuts for the next 12 months. So that will only bring down their Fed rate to 4%, which is very high for the US, being used to something closer to 1.5 over the last decade. So absolute tailspin in the market. All of my screens are red. The US just opened now with a slight recovery, but I mean, we're talking 0.3%. It's almost nothing. It's essentially flat. There's been some massive losses in the markets worldwide. And then, of course, weakening in emerging market currencies, with our rand slotting in at 18.35 at some point today.
Nellis, when you think about the statements from Fed Chair Powell, you kind of get the sense that he's trying to taper and manage expectations and avoid a recessionary environment and kind of ensure a soft landing, which has been his rhetoric for the longest time. But the tone that he delivered yesterday's message with, is that not something that could potentially send markets into the exact recession he's trying to avoid?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we think he should be very careful in the way that he addresses these things, because they have made the biggest mistake in the Fed's history in 2022 or 21, right after COVID, to not react on inflation soon enough. And it starts to seem like they are late once again with cutting rates. And I don't want to go to zero. That also caused problems. But he needs to move a little quicker just to get the average American consumer to level base.
Nellis, what about the rest of the world? We've got data out of the Eurozone. We've got data out of the UK as well. And it suggests for the most part that we might start to see a divergence in how economies are handling things. Other economies might be experiencing recessionary pressures more so than the US. Obviously, not everybody was able to roll out a multi-trillion dollar stimulus package for their own countries. But does this now mean that next year, countries, including South Africa, might look at the picture and say, yeah, we understand what you're doing from a US perspective, but that doesn't line up with us?
We've seen the divergence already, Jimmy. So firstly, in South Africa, which we are very, very happy about, we've seen our Reserve Bank not tracking the cuts on a basis point to basis point as they've done in the past. So there's already formed divergence. And then we've seen some interesting inflationary data from the UK. They have not been able to cut down inflation quite as quickly as the rest of the developed world. And then I think we've entered a space where the way we look at inflation is going to change. I believe we're going to see targets of slightly higher inflation as the norm in your developed countries. And perhaps a country like South Africa should be looking at, it's a discussion me and you've had before, at something below 6 as our target rate, rather than 3 to 6, something like a 2 to 4, to help our economy to mature as well.
Now, let's stick with some geopolitical things happening around the world. I want to look at some global developments. I saw a news article saying that there's a billionaire's yacht that is docked off the coast of Cape Town, and it's a Russian billionaire's yacht. And that's quite interesting because the commentary that came out of that from a South African point of view was at least that Russia is a member of the BRICS bloc, and therefore we will not be doing anything about this information. Is this something that's going to matter next year when we go into a presidency where Donald Trump is ready to wage war against everybody that's not aligned with America?
I think South Africa is in an extremely complex situation here. Because the yacht specifically belongs to Alexei Mordashov. Now, he is a billionaire, or the chairman of their biggest steel and mining company in Russia, Severstal, right? So they are directly supplying the military, or one of the biggest military suppliers, obviously. And he's a close friend of Vladimir Putin. But as you so well said, we are part of BRICS, and our loyalty technically should be sitting with Russia and not with America. So I'm very glad I did not have to make that call whether we allow that boat in or not. Because now if we see the comments that we've had from Damian Lewis, the mayor of Cape Town, he said he's opposed to letting the yacht in. The problem is we can't just simply take America's side because Russia is doing certain things that we do not approve of. Russia is still technically our trading partner, and so is the US. So it's a very, very slippery slope. I think Trump is going to review our AGOA agreement, whether we allow yachts in or not. So perhaps they should rather take the profits. Billionaires do spend a couple of bucks when they're traveling as well, and some of it's not on the credit card. So they might make some money off of him rather than really shifting global tensions by not allowing him in.
Well, I remember an interesting conversation with the, I think it was the spokesperson of the Department of International Relations, clarifying South Africa's non-aligned stance. There's a difference between being non-aligned and being sort of in the middle of nowhere. So non-aligned means we are in the interest of South Africa's interest, and maybe that's what that looks like. Let's move on. It's quite an interesting perspective. There's an article around it. I'll put up the article on socials as well. A very interesting read on the interpretation of whether or not taking a side versus taking your own
just
side.
Just not aligned.
Yeah, not exactly. Aligned. Yeah.
Not simply... Remember, South Africa has no obligation to enforce sanctions on the United Nations. No obligation. So maybe they're simply not doing anything drastic.
Geopolitics are so weird. So weird. Nellis, I want to look at the Nissan-Honda merger. It seems as though Nissan's been going through quite a bit of trouble in Japan. They announced that they were potentially facing bankruptcy. And now we've seen that they could potentially be merging with one of their biggest rivals, Honda, from an EV perspective. But I suppose it's probably from a larger perspective as well if they're battling bankruptcy.
I think the EV explanation is simply a way to break it to the markets. I think it's much bigger than that because Nissan is essentially bankrupt. I mean, they've already laid off, I think, more than 9,000 jobs in this quarter alone. Nissan is in big trouble. Now, the technological advancements that they can make together, they do have a bit of less competitive pressure if they were to merge. That could really help, and they're obvious financial challenges. However, there's a big difference in their corporate cultures. So Honda traditionally has been very, very strongly independent. And Nissan has been very strongly collaborative. So to merge these two would be a very tricky thing. And then, of course, as you well know, Nissan's got an existing alliance with Renault. Previous deal they did to up the cash flow, which is could possibly throw a spanner in the works in a merger like this. I think it will be a savior to Nissan, but it will be very complex to pull off.
Complexities going into the new year. That's going to be something to keep an eye out on, but that's the same conversations that we've been having around the fact that some companies are going to be in the running for picking up some really good assets next year, and this could potentially be one of those good deals. We'll see how the deal unfolds. We'll see how it plays out going into next year. For now, Nellis, thanks so much for the time and the contributions throughout the year. We'll look forward to catching up in the new year. We'll leave the conversation there. Nellis Brink, Wealth Manager at PSG Wealth.
Bitcoin cracked $100,000 over the last week, hitting another all-time high that pulled a ton of altcoins back to life, with some gaining 3 to 400% in a month. My name is Shivan Mudli. I'm the macro strategist at 88, and I'll be on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast this week to discuss the latest developments and what's likely to happen in 2025. Please join us.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Sometime around lunchtime today, we got a SENS announcement saying that Eskom had provided us with an update of the year that was for them. They posted a 55 billion rand loss for the previous fiscal year. Despite this loss, Eskom is forecasting that they will be returning to profit next year. Joined on the line by the Eskom Chief Financial Officer, Caleb Kassim, to take a look at the numbers and see if we can make sense of them. Good evening, Caleb. Lovely to catch up with you, especially this late in the year. First and foremost, your thoughts around the performance of Eskom throughout the year?
I think, firstly, Jimmy, thanks, and thanks for having me on. I think up until March, yeah, difficult set of results operationally, financially, also challenges on a governance perspective, resulting, as you indicated, a bottom line 55 billion loss. So loss before tax did improve year on year by 9 billion rand on the back of an 18% tariff increase during that year, but significant load shedding, high diesel usage, some 34 billion on diesel spend for the year. And then we had to adjust an accounting entry for the derecognition of a deferred tax asset, which put to an expense on our tax line of about 37 billion, resulting in the loss of 55 billion rand as of March.
Caleb, when we look at the announcement, part of the concerns, you said obviously there were some governance concerns, and I see that there were also some audit concerns. The external auditors put together a 12-page list of concerns in their audit report that was presented to Parliament. And chief among those, I want to look at some of those points there, but I suppose chief among those is the material uncertainty relating to the going concern status of Eskom. They flagged that they're not certain around the going concern status of Eskom following this 55 billion rand loss. You, as the Eskom team, have forecasted that next year you'll be returning to profitability. Take me through that. Take me through how we swing from a significant loss back to a profit, obviously, aside from that deferred tax booking that you had to take into account. Yeah.
No, definitely, Jimmy. And in, maybe if we remove the deferred tax, if I touch with the loss before tax of 25 billion to looking at this profit of 10 billion. I think first and foremost, number one, with no load shedding, and we are seeing with the better performance, we're looking to reduce our diesel spend from 34 billion by about 20 billion year on year to March 25. So that's a 20 billion upside that will come through. Then secondly, also the fact that we're not load shedding, we do see about a 4% growth in sales year on year. And if we just see the impact that we disclosed, you know, for March 24 at about 13 terawatt hours of volumes, which is about 7% on sales volumes, we lost about 22 billion in revenue because of load shedding. Yes, we believe we will recoup a large component of that, also appreciating that a lot of customers have got rooftop PV. So there's an upside from delivering and not load shedding. And then there's the last element that contributes to the forecast. We've been in discussions with SARS now for a number of years around rebates around our diesel expenditure. We finally settled with them in October to pay back and recover 9 billion rand, which is a subsequent event and will come through in the income statement of March 25. And then also focusing on other cost items. Last but not least, with the debt relief we've got from government and converting into equity, we're forecasting to see your interest charges then reduce on the back of Eskom not borrowing and then the debt coming down, Jimmy.
Caleb, let's deal with the elephant in the room around the revenues and the projections and all of that. 95.4 billion rand as of November is what municipalities owed you, and that number is up almost 30% from the March numbers that you've actually reported on. So clearly the municipalities aren't paying you. That debt is getting wider. How then can we forecast that the business is going to be doing well if your debtors are not paying you? Or does that just mean that we're going to be getting more tariff hikes being put on the consumer?
No, so I think firstly, that's our one biggest concern as a board, as a management team, and I think the minister also highlighted that this is unsustainable. And yes, as at November, we were looking at the 95 billion rand, and if this trend continues, you know, by March 25, we even were forecasting we could be sitting at 110 billion rand. So two concerns around that issue. If that continues and there's no resolution at a government level, then the benefit we're getting from the 250 billion debt relief will be nullified. Secondly, and rightfully so, we didn't recognize 9 billion of revenue because we had to recognize it on a cash basis. So if that rate increases going forward, the amount we're not going to collect and recognize is going to increase. We have put this in the tariff application, but we put through an area percentage of 2%, whereas we currently is running closer at 5%. Our message is very clear. It's unsustainable. Where Eskom is, we can't be a bank to the municipalities. And the minister has, in today's session, communicated that early in the new year, Eskom, himself and his department, plus, I guess, National Treasury and local government, need to sit around the table. He says he has ideas on a solution, and we work with the minister to arrest this trend.
Caleb, when we look at some of the other unsustainable matters from an Eskom perspective, there were some key audit matters that were highlighted by the external auditors around the illicit creation of prepaid tokens. That was a serious concern from their perspective. Now, I know Eskom recently implemented a shift over for readjusting the meters and all of that. Has that exercise gone directly towards dealing with the illicit token creation, and does this mean that we can put that part behind us?
So definitely, that was one of the initiatives to reduce that exposure of the illicit tokens. I think we'll have to wait and see, Jimmy. I don't believe that, we'll have to see what's the trend going forward. But it was one of the mechanisms. The other ones, what we also want to do as a key strategy, we need to roll out some 7 million smart meters in the next 3 years. That will be a mitigating factor. But at the end of the day, Jimmy, you need to deal with collusion and corruption. You know, if it's between Eskom employees plus suppliers, etc., that's an element we need to work with law enforcement agencies, set examples, and then do the necessary legal interventions on these issues. But we looking forward to KRN2 rollout to mitigate a large portion of it. But I think it's early days before we celebrate and say it's behind us.
Speaking of that collusion and corruption, Caleb, the basis of the qualified opinion, part of that was criminal conduct. There was about 6.7 billion rand of losses due to criminal conduct. This is obviously a serious matter for Eskom and affects its profitability. We just spoke about the swing going from the negative 25 billion to a positive 10 billion. This could be an additional 6 billion rand that would otherwise not have to be incurred, in addition to the 4 billion rand of irregular expenditure that was also flagged in the audit report. You mentioned a governance problem. This is two items that's 10 billion rands worth of problem already. How are we dealing with this from an Eskom perspective? What's the board's strategy here?
Yeah, so what we've done, we've got two initiatives. Firstly, we've got a project management office that's dealing with these key high-level investigations to expedite that and to get it to a conclusion as quick as possible, reporting directly to the CEO and then into our audit and risk committee. Second initiative we've implemented, we've consolidated our forensic investigations and the security department so you can get a holistic view. And then the last point, we're working very closely with the security cluster, which includes the OSAT, state intelligence, as well as the SIU. We have seen in the recent past some arrests and convictions being made, but there's been tremendous support. But again, it's the problem here, Jimmy, it's the few bad apples that creates a bad name for the rest of the loyal employees in Eskom, but we have to deal with them.
They certainly do need to be dealt with, and we'll keep an eye on how these news and developments unfold. We look forward to next year being a profitable year. I can't wait to have this conversation looking back on a profitable year. But for now, we'll leave the conversation there, Caleb. Thanks so much for the time, as always, and for the insights. Caleb Kasim, Chief Financial Officer at Eskom, joining us to reflect on their financial year ended March 2024.
Affordable data is more than just a convenience, it's a real catalyst for change. In the latest Fix SA episode, I talked to George Mendez, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Cell C, about the telco industry's role in driving inclusive economic growth. From empowering underserved communities to fostering entrepreneurship, connectivity is unlocking potential and creating opportunities.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Given that it is the festive period, I thought we'd take a look at the travel trends that may have been emerging. There's an interesting study that was done by the team at Marriott International around the fact that South Africans plan on taking more holidays in 2025. I guess we're all sick and tired of sitting at home and having to deal with the things we've had to deal with in 2024. I'm joined on the line by the area commercial director for Marriott, Great International Sub-Saharan Africa, Dr. Dlamini Mbele, to take a look at this and see what's going on here. Good evening, Dr. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with understanding the trends that you guys have identified. The report suggests that South Africans intend on traveling more next year. What's driving that?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jimmy, for having me. Great to be able to share some insights from this wonderful research that we've received. So yeah, so the reports that came out, we completed we conducted the research in September, and we conducted it over about 2,000 South Africans from all walks of lives and different demographics. And it really showed that South Africans are looking forward to traveling more next year. By the looks of things, South Africans are looking to collect more experiences rather than actually spending more money on material things. And what really is great about it is that the more that they want to travel, they actually want to travel more in the country, which is really exciting. That's what came out really strongly on the research.
Docus, when we look at some of the other trends that came out, there's a trend around something called bravecations. What is that?
it's an interesting trend and really actually exciting. And I think it's quite telling of the South African characters as well. So the bravecation came out, and basically what that means is that, you know, most South Africans are looking forward to going on holidays and really trying different activities, things that they wouldn't otherwise try at home. The three top things that came out were things like, you know, they want to climb mountains, or they want to jump off a high building, or zip lining, or skydiving, or try unusual foods. And I think that really is coming from just this adventurous spirit that South Africans have, that we're really brave. And what was also more interesting is that when we looked outside of just South Africa and other countries that we actually did the study at, South Africans came out tops as being the more brave nation outside of the 10 countries that we actually conducted the study at.
Docker, speaking of bravery, are South Africans being brave with their bank accounts as well? I mean, I can't imagine that holidays are getting any cheaper at this point. Are South Africans just saying, look, regardless of the price, we're going to go on holiday? Or are you seeing that South Africans might be shopping around a little, trying to get a good deal here and there?
Yeah, so what came out on the survey was the fact that actually South Africans are very savvy with their monies. They want to stretch the randela a little bit more to get the best value. Now, part of the research also showed that South Africans actually want to travel with families and their extended families, so they don't want to travel on their own. But now that becomes a little bit more expensive. So what we found from the spending perspective is that South Africans are looking to travel on shoulder periods where it's off peak seasons. And they also are very keen to look for really good deals. So like, for example, we've just had the Black Friday, and Marriott Bonvoy ran a Cyber Week sale, which was really fantastic. So they are actually planning their travel around being able to really get good deals, travel outside of the peak periods in order for them to be able to expand on the rand or their budgets, and also take their families with.
Docus, we were looking at trends a little earlier on around some of the things that you've been picking up with regards to South Africans' plans and all of that. One of the trends that's emerged is the use of artificial intelligence. That's a surprising one, because you kind of don't put together AI and travel in a hurry. I mean, you put it together for other things, but not necessarily for booking a holiday. What's happening here?
Yeah. So what we found is that travelers nowadays, they're actually using AI as a planning tool, right? So a way to be able to kind of figure out what places to go to, plan their holidays, as, you know, we spoke just briefly around planning around off-peak season. But they're also looking for inspiration using the actual tool, understanding how else they can make their holidays a little bit more efficient, using the technology. And, you know, nearly half of South Africans out of the study, about 48%, say that they actually have used AI to help them plan and research their holiday destination. And what was interesting is that actually South Africa came out tops again, over and above the Europe, Middle Eastern countries that we actually did the survey at. So AI, South Africans are, you know, are really ahead of most markets in utilizing AI to really plan and enhance their experiences during their holidays.
Speaking of those enhanced experiences, Docus, what are you seeing as what is top of mind for travelers going into 2025? Are you picking up that they're looking for specific things, holiday or family orientated kind of destinations and packages? Are they looking for certain types of service or certain locations? Are you seeing anything stand out there?
Yeah, there is definitely. There's certain things that we call what we call brilliant basics, right? And they remain key for the travelers. So to your point, you know, price obviously is important. And considering that South Africans are looking to travel with their family, look for those package deals, a package with a flight, with a car, or, you know, any other travel element. So price is one of the key points. But some of the brilliant basics or important factors that South Africans are looking at when they make those decisions is cleanliness. So they are saying, whoever is a travel provider, whether it's a flight or a hotel or any accommodation supplier, cleanliness is key. Second to that was location. Of course, you want to be in the right location to be able to have access to the attractions and the experiences that you might be looking for at that destination. And then one of the other one was the customer experience. South Africans want to make sure that they're having good quality experience when they're on their holidays. And we saw that this was actually quite top priority. The other things that we're looking at is, you know, food options. I mentioned earlier on that, you know, in their Bravecation, the Bravecation trend came out that South Africans want to try different food, unusual food, and that's something that Africans are looking to do. They want to have interesting food, but they also want to indulge in buffets, because it's also quite economical to be able to do that. They want to try out local restaurants. We know that we've got plenty of that, the beautiful offerings that we have in South Africa, and you know, culinary experience in this country is fantastic. So our customers, our travelers are looking for them. South Africans are planning for.
So, Docus, from a Marriott International perspective, now that you have all of this information, is this something that you guys are using to tailor your deals and your packages and your offers going into 2025?
Yes, definitely. We are looking to tailor our offerings according to what the South Africans are planning to do next year. So one of the things that we have is obviously our Marriott Bonvoy loyalty program, which is the top and the largest loyalty programs around the world, offers our customers these unique and unparalleled experiences at our hotels throughout the country. Various brands like the Protea, which is the, you know, well-loved brand in South Africa. So looking to take this research and use it as we plan to put our offerings in for Africans.
Well, there you have it, folks. South Africans intend on traveling more in 2025, and you can't stop them. Maybe you should join them. Can't beat them, join them. We'll leave the conversation there. Thanks so much, Docus, for the time and for the insights. Docus Dlamini Mbele, who joined us from Marriott International to take a look at some emerging holiday and travel trends that South Africans seem to be exhibiting.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we're going to wrap up our year with reflecting on the Rand and the performance of the Rand throughout the year. I'm joined on the line by Director at Treasury One, Andre Celeris, to take a look at the performance of the Rand. Good evening, Andre. Thanks so much for taking the time. I genuinely thought you and I would be having the September-October conversation around the 17 Rand, 16 Rand mark, but instead we're having an 18 Rand 50 conversation. Not a good way to end the year.
Not a good way to end the year. Good evening to all the listeners and to yourself. Yes, it's been an interesting one. I mean, we started the year at a very bad footing. The elections that was playing around in South Africa did cause a little bit of havoc beforehand, and we had seen a slightly weak rand before the elections. And after the elections in South Africa, we had seen the GNU being formed, and that went down fantastically well with international investors. And we had seen Rand doing great. We had seen levels of 17.10. And then after that, the whole situation surrounding interest rates in America and the possibility of that being in decline and lower change in monetary stance by the Federal Reserve came into play, and inflation figures. And that dragged out, and then eventually when they started cutting, they came in with a fantastic 50 basis point cut. And then we followed suit with only 25 basis points. That benefited the Rand again. But we've been hovering around for a very long time between the 17.50 and 18.50. And every time that the Rand crept up to the 18.30 levels, it was sort of on a toppish level and then retreated back lower. And as early as 2 weeks ago, about a week ago, we were trading well below 70, well below 18, around the 17.65.
Andre,
and now we're at 18.50.
Yeah, Andre, when we look at the performance of the Rand, I mean, you noted the elections, of course, and I'm looking at just a Rand chart. I think around the month of June was the best month for the Rand, gaining about 4% against the US dollar. It went on to gain after that, but that was a very big defining moment for the Rand and for the direction of the Rand going into the rest of the year, because I mean, prior to that election, we were at 19 Rand.
Yes, we were at 19. And the expectation was not for a GNU. We must clearly remember that the expectation was not for a GNU. The political parties beforehand had said they will not work with the ANC. The most positive factor that came out of our elections was most probably not the forming of the GNU. It was the fact that the ANC had gone below 50%, around 40% level, and they had accepted that. Now, we go through Africa, and just as recent as we know what happens in Mozambique currently, change is not something that is easily accepted in Africa. And yet locally, the ANC just accepted their defeat, accepted that they were below the 50% and not in government anymore. And then the GNU followed from that, and that was a very positive one, and still being positively perceived internationally, positively received by ratings agencies. And after that, then we must remember that we then started counting the chickens before they were hatched on the elections in America, and it was sort of, who's going to win, the blue or the red? Is it Trump or is it Kamala Harris? That there came out as a clear, fantastic win for Donald Trump. And that also then boosted the dollar. And that also took the Rand a little bit weaker again. But we must be careful. If we speak about an 1850 or close to an 1850, around the 1840s here in the late trading of today, we must not think that the Rand is weak. The Rand is actually performing excellently. It is a dollar that it strengthened quite significantly against the euro, against the pound, against a lot of other major currencies. If we simply look at a trade-weighted basis, So in other words, there you bring into account the euro rand, the pound rand, the Australian rand, Australian dollar against the rand. Then we will see that on a trade-weighted basis, the rand is actually doing reasonably well at this point in time. So one must always be careful to just only measure it against one currency, i.e. the dollar.
Mm.
Because that gives you an incorrect picture of how well or how badly the rand is doing currently.
Mm. Andre, what can we expect going into next year? We've dealt with every imaginable, every conceivable geopolitical situation that we can think of, from wars to all sorts of things. What can we expect going into 2025, at least for our local currency?
Okay, so for the local currency, for 2025, the change in interest rate and monetary policy and the pace at which it happens in the United States will remain at the forefront. What will also remain at the forefront is what happens in the war in the Middle East, specifically Israel, Gaza, Iran, and so forth. That's important. And there, the role that the Americans will play and the possible changes in policies in that regard by the Trump administration, and also very much the same for the war between Russia and Ukraine. What is the changes? What is the emphasis that can change from the United States towards those wars? Locally, the GNU and the success or failure of the GNU going forward. We know that there's a few hiccups, but we know that they're also navigating quite clearly in a positive manner around those. But that's also one thing that will definitely be at the forefront of the minds of investors and ratings agencies going forward in 2025. Those, I think, is the key ones. Another key one is to watch closely what happens in Europe. There we have two of the big role players in Europe, France and Germany. That's got to go into elections next year. And how they play out could also have an impact on the value of the euro, very specifically against the dollar. And that could also impact on the rand.
Sounds like we've got a lot to anticipate going into next year. There's going to be a lot to deal with, and we're going to have our hands full. We'll leave the conversation there for now. Andre, thank you so much for the time and for the insights. Andre Celeris, Director of Treasury One, joining me to take a look at where we see the rand going into next year, but also how the rand performed this year.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. Standard Bank has been on a campaign to ensure that they support small businesses throughout the small business journey. It's quite an interesting initiative from their perspective, but the journey doesn't just end with that, with the award. The journey doesn't just end with supporting small businesses. There have been a series of awards and recognitions that Standard Bank has come out with as a result of their contributions. And I'm joined on the line by the head of enterprise and supplier development at Standard Bank Business Banking and Commercial Banking, Naledzani Mashumane, to take a look at this. Naledzani, thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with the ESD awards. Tell us about the Enterprise and Supply Development Awards. How did that come about?
Thanks. Good evening, Jimmy, and good evening to your listeners. So we really wanted to honor and recognize some of our ESD participants. And in doing so, we realized that we should do something similar to an award ceremony. We wanted to really celebrate the work that the SMEs that we work with have done. We know that typically entrepreneurship is a very difficult journey and it's a lonely journey. And typically there's no one to celebrate these SMEs for their successes. And hence we decided to have our Enterprise and Supplier Development Awards last week.
Now, Lizani, this year's awards were titled Celebrating Excellence and Rewarding Dedication. Obviously, when it comes to small businesses, we celebrate all the milestones that we can. But take me through just the inspiration behind the theme. Take me through some of the categories that went on, that were awarded within the awards, and why Standard Bank has been using this kind of initiative to recognize SMEs.
So at Standard Bank, we say that we partner with our clients for growth to start, manage, and grow. As part of our enterprise and supply development program, over the past 2 years, we've had almost 2,000 SMEs that we've worked with in different enterprise and supply development initiatives. And that's why we really thought it would be important to really celebrate these SMEs, celebrate the work that they've done and the dedication that they have in running and sustaining their businesses. The awards had four key categories. The first one was growth. So we really wanted to recognize SMEs that had shown growth in terms of revenue, market expansion, or even growing their workforce. We also wanted to celebrate SMEs that were innovative. So our second category was innovation. And here we really wanted to acknowledge SMEs that had demonstrated exceptional creativity, were forward thinking in terms of the work that they do. We also had another category which looked at social impact, which really focused on SMEs that had a positive impact on the societies that they operate within. And then the last one was resilience. We wanted to recognize SMEs that had shown exceptional resilience and that had faced challenges and had managed to overcome the challenges.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's add, I would want to look at some of the stories, but unfortunately, we might not have time for that. I want to look at Standard Bank's bigger objectives. It's not just about recognizing the businesses. It's also about supporting the businesses where they need your support. Take me through some of the initiatives or some of the things that Standard Bank has in place to support the businesses beyond just saying, hey, we recognize that you're doing well. Here, let's actually support you in your business.
So Standard Bank really has an holistic business and commercial banking offering. Within our business banking and commercial banking offering, we say, how do we partner with our clients to start, manage, and grow? We have a range of solutions all aimed at supporting businesses. We have a low-cost transactional account, which is our MyMobiz account, which is at 9 rand per month, which really says this is an account where SMEs can actually start transacting, which is important when you're running a business. We have different merchant solutions. We have different funding solutions, all aimed at supporting businesses in their moments that matter to them to start, manage, and grow. We also say, as Standard Bank, we show up as being more than a bank. And how we do that is through a variety of initiatives. We have an advisory capability. We support businesses that might have complex funding solutions that might need support in that. We support businesses that want to expand beyond South Africa. Standard Bank operates in 22 countries across the continent. So we really have access to markets beyond South Africa. And then we also support businesses as part of our enterprise and supply development program, where we work with businesses that are predominantly at a minimum 51% black owned and really need support to start and grow their enterprises.
Now, Lizana, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the role of institutions like Standard Bank in the entrepreneurial ecosystem. I mean, obviously, you mentioned that the bank is operating within Africa. If I remember correctly, the Standard Bank Group is the largest bank on the African continent by assets, so certainly a bank with a serious presence on the continent. But Africa is a continent of entrepreneurs. Take me through just where a bank fits into the entrepreneurial ecosystem and why that's so important.
So I think a bank is critical when we start looking at that entrepreneurial ecosystem. At the end of the day, SMEs need to be able to move money, whether it's paying staff, whether it's purchasing stock, purchasing equipment, whether it's doing cross-border transactions. You do need to be able to walk the journey with a financial institution able to work. The benefit of a bank is that we also have partners, right? And in having those partners, we are able to create access to opportunities beyond what you might see, beyond the operating environment that you operate within. And we are also able to say, how do we solution for your business? So when we start thinking about the role of banking in terms of improving the economy, and the role of banking in terms of making sure that businesses have access the role of banking in terms of making sure that businesses grow and thrive, which is critical when we start talking about economic development, when we start talking about creating jobs. Banks are really, really crucial in enabling that entrepreneurial ecosystem, so that the economies in which we operate within as financial institutions thrive.
Certainly a great ecosystem to be a part of, especially when you have the support of an institution like Standard Bank. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Thank you so much, Naledzane, for the time and for the insights. Naledzane Moshomane, Head of Enterprise and Supply Development at Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
We're going to wrap up the show and we're going to wrap up the year by reflecting on one of the conversations that we had earlier in the year. We're going to replay a conversation that we had as part of our SME of the week a couple of weeks ago with a gentleman by the name of Jake Pincus. He was the founder of VisoPay. Let's listen on that chat. It's another SME Thursday, and this week we're taking a look at a very interesting innovation by the guys at VisoPay. They've created a new payment method, and I will let the founder of the business give you more information about that. I'm joined on the line by the founder and CEO at VisoPay, that's Jake Pincus, to take a look at their business. Good evening, Jake. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about VisoPay.
First of all, thank you for having us on your show. We're really excited to be on the show. So yeah, VisoPay. Essentially, we're a payment wearable company, and we've just brought out Africa's first contactless payment ring that is passive. And what that means is it has no battery, there's no need to charge it, and you can wear it anywhere you go. The device is designed to be waterproof, drop-proof, and for you to take along on your life's adventures.
Now, when we say payment wearables, obviously we are referring to things like payment watches and things. Why did you go with the ring?
So, interesting question. There is a backstory to it. The reason why we chose the ring, though, to launch on, at a later stage, we will be looking at bringing out some other wearables, is because the ring is just different to everything else that's come out in the market thus far. And because it's the smallest part of your body, that's in the most convenient place to make a payment, we thought this is something that really will attract attention, because we have already, you know, gone around with our first prototypes and seen how people react to the different payment wearables. And always when they saw the ring making payments, almost like magic, because people struggle to understand how is it possible that this tiny little device can make a payment. And the first question always is, you know, there must be a battery in there, there must be something. And it's just magic, you know, and I think that's the greatest way to start our launch, to get a lot of attention to what we're trying to bring to the payment space.
Mm. So Jake, take me through the tech. Is it NFC? How does it actually function? Because I want to look at the mechanism, but then also the security of the payment.
Of course, security is always the biggest question, especially for South Africans. So the tech is NFC chip inside. It's got encrypted applets on it. It is Visa and MasterCard approved. And we use a process called tokenization, which for those who don't know what that is, it's the same as Samsung or Google Pay, the way that they use their technology. To explain that and to try to dumb it down, it essentially means we assign a Visa or MasterCard token to the ring, and your card credentials are never actually stored directly on the wearable. So the wearable acts like a bank card wrapped around your finger, but your credentials are never there. It's hidden by a token. So it makes it even more secure than a standard bank card, that your credentials are not only written on the card with your CVV and your actual card number. It is possible to skim magstripe or chips, whereas with ours, it's a token. So if it were to be, you know, someone tries to skim your data, all they would receive is a random string of data, which is a token.
Very, very interesting right there. I'm always keen to find out about these sorts of things, especially where they relate to these technological advancements here. Jake, when we look at security now, the next step around that is, if I lose the ring, does any of my data, or do I need to do anything? Do I need to block anything? So
if I lose my bank card, I know the procedure I need to follow. Is there a similar procedure if I lose my ring, or do I just replace the ring and get a new token linked?
Exactly. So that is the beauty of it, that if you lose your ring, of course, the first thing you can do is pause it in the app, which means that the ring itself is essentially locked. And if whoever has your ring, if they do, or if you just lost it, it means the ring is essentially rendered useless. And because I explained that there's a token stored in it, there is no details for them to steal once you lock your ring. On top of that, you can, of course, contact your bank or contact us, and your card can be stopped or your ring can be locked.
Can I link more than one card to the same ring?
A very good question. For the launch, it's only going to be one card per ring to start. But at a later stage, we will be looking at having more functionality and be able to switch between different cards or different banks and such.
So we've got the tech stuff out the way. Let's get into the interesting stuff. You've got very, very interesting price points on these rings. Take me through them.
Of course. So because the rings range from such, we have three different ranges. We've got the X range, which is our more base range. And then we've got the classic range in the middle and the signature range at the top. And, you know, that range is anywhere from 2,500 Rand up to 35 Rand on the top end. And the reason why there's such a price discrepancy, of course, is because there's actual real gold or real silver in the classic and the signature. So we go all the way up to 18 karat gold on the signature range. So obviously the value of the gold itself increases the price there. And also, of course, it is a premium product, and it is targeted those for the launch, at least. At a later stage, we do intend to bring out a more mass market product. But for the launch, it is a premium set of rings, should we say.
And we're going to leave that conversation right there, because it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means we're going to have to cross back to the news team for the latest round in evening news. Ndela Mbana is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.